Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. Today, I'm really honoured to have a very special guest with me because this particular individual has been one of my clients for a number of years now. Starting off with a rather disorganized portfolio, he can tell you about that himself, and working up to now where he has a really well-systemized and well-run business. When I first met this particular individual, it was actually at a Property Investor Network meeting in Stoke, and it was one of those meetings that you never forget, because since then I've been working with him to help systemize his business, but also to build his property portfolio. So today, a big welcome to Ethan Roscoe. Hi, Ethan.
Hi, Wendy. How are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. It's great to have you on today, Ethan. And I'm really, really honored to have you.
It's great to be a guest on your podcast. Thanks very much for inviting me.
You're very, very welcome. Now, Ethan, before we get started, you know the rules. I always start with a series of five quick fire questions for my guests, just to kind of get them, you know, revved up. But the rules are simple. You can only answer yes or no, or a very short answer.
Okay.
So if you need to go into any more depth, we can go into that in a minute. But for these first five questions, you just a short, quick, you know, it's quick fire round.
Okay? Perfect. Perfect.
Okay, so are you ready?
Yes.
All right, great. So question number one, do you need experience in property before setting out on HMOs?
No. As long as you've got the education, you don't need experience in my view.
Great. Is raising investor finance hard?
It is challenging, but certainly not impossible.
What is most important to you? Room rents, so the level of room rents that you can get, mortgage payments, or getting all your money out of a deal?
Getting money out the deal.
Great. Is it a good idea to focus on one kind of tenant in which to build your portfolio around?
If your tenant focus is on a particular demographic in your area, yes. Like my demographic is Eastern Europeans, but I am flexible.
Great. And should people try and build a portfolio with their own money or with other people's money?
With other people's money.
Great. Excellent. Ethan, fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, so I can see that some of those questions, it was a challenge to get a one-word answer out of you. Because, of course, you're very considered and you would consider those questions before answering rashly. But that really shows the experience that you have. Now, for the benefit of people who don't know you, can you just give us a brief summary of your background and also tell us a little bit about where you originate from, because I can hear in your accent that you're not a native born British person.
Yes. So I went to school and I studied in South Africa. I studied as a civil engineer back in South Africa. And I was fortunate enough to get a bursary through the roads department. So after qualifying, I worked for the Natal Roads Department, just north of Durban, for 8 years, and then they were offering voluntary redundancies to get the number of the proportion of colour in the government correct. So I took my redundancy, thinking it was a nice big package, but it didn't go far when it was converted into pounds and knew how expensive things were in the UK. So it soon disappeared. I was then on arriving in the UK, I did freelance work for the first 6 months. And then after that, I was fortunate to secure a good position with a large engineering company in the UK. And yeah, that was back in April 2002. And then during my time in the UK, the first few years, was actually 18 months, I just noticed a sharp rise in property prices during that time and thought, you know, I thought it would be a good idea to buy property with the thought that if my situation changed in any way, I could sell the property and make a bit of a profit anyway. So I didn't see much of a risk in property. Yeah, so it was then I decided to look into buying property. At that time, there wasn't a lot of property education out there like there is nowadays, where one is pretty spoiled with all the different courses you can do and mentors you can join. It was actually through a friend that I bought my first property back in January 2004. And that was about 21 months after arriving in the UK. And then between 2004 and 2007, during the property boom, I completed on 13 properties. And yeah, I actually completed on 4 properties in the last quarter of 2007, just before the crash, which, you know, was probably the worst time to complete on a property, but was fortunate to hold on to my properties during the crash. And actually it benefited me in a way, because interest rates after the crash dropped, so actually improved my cash flow. Unfortunately, the property crash affected the construction industry, so I was made redundant at the end of 2009. And yeah, a lot of us saw it coming on site, but even though we could see it coming, it wasn't a nice thing to go through. And I do feel
I can imagine it was challenging.
I was fortunate. I was single, didn't have a family, so I just didn't have a family to have to worry about. But yeah, so after reevaluating everything, I realized that with the rental income coming in and the mortgage payments going out, I was in positive cash flow. So decided I didn't want that to happen to me again, and decided I wanted to be in control of my own destiny. So went into property full time. By that time, I had purchased a number of properties and was up in Stoke-on-Trent and was looking at networking with other landlords to see how I could do things better, improve my cash flow, and also just connect with other landlords to see what other people were doing. And it was then when I went to a PIM meeting in Stoke-on-Trent and met Wendy, and the rest is history.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute, Ethan, because you're right, that was a really, historic moment. But, you know, going back to your story, very, very interesting that you had kind of made a new life in the UK with the promise of opportunity and potentially making some money through property and a more stable environment, I think, that you could clearly say, than South Africa. South Africa is a beautiful country. I visited South Africa, but it's had a somewhat unstable political and economic time over the last 20 years. So I think being in the UK, you probably benefited from the bit more stability that the UK has presented. However, given what you say about when you bought, you were buying at a time, little did you know at the time, of course, that it would actually cause some instability to you.
Yes.
So that must have been pretty difficult to navigate at the time. How did you get through that time, Ethan?
Yes, it was a difficult time. And it was just through persistence and perseverance, and I put a lot of hard work into purchasing my properties, and I was pretty adamant I wasn't going to lose them. So I did everything I could possible to ensure that the mortgages were paid, and I got through it.
Let me ask you a bit about your mindset, because I know that you in the time that you've been investing, you've seen these ups and downs in the market. You've studied aspects of the monetary system and macroeconomics. I know we've talked about that many a time, and you've managed to navigate your way through it very, very well. Now you've got a very healthy portfolio. Because you have managed to hold on to that capital, those capital assets, they perform very well for you. So for somebody who's maybe earlier on in their journey, developing their HMO portfolio, given your experience over the number of years that you've been investing, what could you say to them about the importance of mindset when perhaps it looks like things are not going as well as you had hoped?
Yes, obviously to remain positive, and as you know, Wendy, back then I was heavily involved in listening to a lot of audio in my car, CDs. That's obviously all changed now with the digital world. But I think even when we met up to go and see one of your projects after that PIM meeting, I presented you with a CD gift of, I think it was The Slight Edge from, I forget the author.
And I went on to read The Compound Effect after that.
Yes. So remain positive. Go to as many networking events as possible to keep up to date with what's going on in the property sector. Surround yourself with other people that inspire you. Obviously, joining Wendy's mentoring group, it was inspiring to see even those that had just joined the group with little or no experience, within a couple of months, 3 months, buy their first HMO and start moving forward. And obviously that's inspiring for even somebody with experience like myself, who's got a number of properties, to see others doing well. It encourages you to up your game and buy more properties.
Yes. And of course that is exactly what you've done, and you've inspired other people. Now, Ethan, one of the areas that I asked you about very early on in those series of five quick questions was about raising finance and the importance of thinking about and determining, you could say, to use other people's money rather than your own. Now, I'd love you to share the story that you have often shared before about an amazing situation that occurred to you when you didn't have any more money to invest with. And you did something quite remarkable, and it had some amazing results. Would you mind sharing that story?
Yes. So if it's the same story I'm thinking of, in my property journey, I decided to have graphics put on my car. So I had We Buy Houses and then my mobile number put on the car. And I did have a number of calls from that. I used to get a call approximately once every month from that. On one occasion, when I was filling up at the Sainsbury's fuel station, somebody approached me and said, "I see you are involved in property. Do you have a business card? And is it okay if I give you a call?" And I gave the person the business card, and it was, a few days later, we arranged to meet at the cafe in Sainsbury's, and we, after two or three meetings, very nice chap. I mean, that first meeting went on for 3 hours and it felt like half an hour. It was a great meeting. And so after three meetings, he ended up lending me £19,000 for a refurb that I was doing, because after joining Wendy's program, she encouraged her students to improve their cash flow and convert their single lets into HMOs. So Graham lent me £19,000 to convert one of my properties, and actually it was quite an experience because we ran out of funds just towards the end, and I had to approach Graham again and explain the situation and show him all the costings of the project and ask him if I could borrow another, I think it was £7,000 to complete the project. And yeah, that's how I raised the finance for my first project.
So once you'd done that, of course, I think it built your confidence quite significantly, didn't it?
Yes. I did have quite a strange call once traveling down the motorway. Somebody said to me, do you buy Shetland ponies? And they had misread it. Instead of "we buy houses," they thought it said "we buy horses." And I was very surprised, but I only realized 5 minutes later that they had misread the advert on my car.
Ethan, that's hilarious.
I was also on the way to the airport once flying abroad because I love traveling. And there was a multi-millionaire traveling behind me in a very smart car, and he said, "I've seen your advert, I'd like to catch up with you. I'm behind you." That put even more pressure on me, but yeah, so we had a long chat on the way to the airport, and
it just goes to show that when you advertise and when you put "we buy houses" on the side of your car, it does create results. It might not be quite the results you were expecting, but you certainly can garner a bit of a reaction from your audience.
Yes, and also your phone number is always on your car. So I often used to take chances when parking in certain places because I thought if somebody's got a problem, they can just phone me and ask me to move my car, yes, which was a bit cheeky, really.
Oh, yes, very good. Well, I'm sure that you probably, well, if you'd carried on, I don't think you still have that number on your car now, do you?
No. And it also does help when viewing properties, actually, because it did put me at ease and made me more comfortable when I was sitting on my car looking, you know, stopped on the side of the road looking at a property. You don't feel as though somebody's thinking, "Who's this strange chap? You've got this writing all over your car." It's they can just read the writing and understand that you stopped and you're looking at a property or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Ethan, since those kind of early days, you've gone on and you've done some JVs, you've created more HMOs. But I think one of the things that has always struck me about your business is we've worked together, aside from your commitment to systems and creating a really systemized business, is your market. Can you explain to us how it came about that you have got a very strong niche that you rent to?
Yes. So a lot of Eastern Europeans working in the industrial areas, they are mainly involved in blue-collared jobs, online jobs. And I guess it's because at the beginning as well, there was a big Polish community that did change after Brexit to a degree, although there are still Polish people coming into the UK. Brexit affected the market a little bit because because the pound devalued, it wasn't as lucrative for Polish people to be working in the UK and then sending money back home. They could get a job in one of their neighboring countries like Germany and earn not far off what they were earning in the UK. So yes, so because the staff that were helping me in my business, that was my girlfriend at the time as well, we did a lot of advertising on the Polish Facebook pages, and I think they've got two Facebook pages in Redditch, and two or three actually. And so most of my clients came from there, and obviously they do make good tenants because they look after your property, they pay on time. I think it's because they're in a foreign country and they don't know all the regulations. You know, they just want to have a nice clean house and quiet house, and you know, a lot of them were doing long hours, 10, 12 hour days, and working hard, paying their rent and keeping it clean. So yeah.
So that's been a niche that you've kind of focused on, really, and it seems to have paid off very well, because now I think you're probably quite well known in that community. If friends are looking for a room to rent of your current tenants, they can pass your name on. So you've created a very nice little kind of brand niche, I think, in Redditch for what you do. Have there been any times when you've wondered whether it was too narrow and that you really needed to advertise more widely to broader tenant base?
I was a little bit concerned after Brexit, but just for a short period, 6 months or so. But I'll be honest with you, we don't have an issue now, and I get a lot of referrals now. A lot of people coming back from Poland contact me direct. We do offer a referral fee of £50. So if any past tenant refers somebody else, we always say to them that if somebody moves in that you have referred, you'll get £50. I do have a premium account at Spare Room, but I find that the demographic of English people renting rooms can be quite challenging. And that's why I don't avoid Spare Room. We use it occasionally, but I do prefer to use the Facebook pages. And then I have worked in the past with an ex-tenant, a Romanian lady. And if we are struggling on the Polish Facebook pages, she advertises on the Romanian Facebook page. And then I do have a Hungarian lady as well who advertises. If we're really desperate, I hardly ever use her now, but we advertise on the Hungarian Facebook page as well.
You're sort of making your way around Eastern Europe, aren't you, country by country?
Yes, yes.
You'll soon have a multinational team working for you, Ethan.
I do use Google Translate just about every second day.
Very good. Okay, great. So just another quick question. I wanted to ask you about hints and tips for HMO landlords who are just kind of starting off today. Obviously, the market is very different now to what it was 10 years ago. And of course, that's different from what it was 20 years ago. So, you know, you think about it, we're in 2024 now. We're 2 years, perhaps 4 years off the anniversary of the 2008 crash. Some people are saying we're going to have another crash. Other people are saying, no, it's not going to be the same kind of crash. We're going to have an economic crash that really leads to further inflation, which I think is more likely. But whatever the way the wind blows, you've lived through a lot of these, you know, booms and busts. Over that time, if you were to advise somebody who's maybe been in the market for a few years, but perhaps is feeling that with all the increase in energy costs and mortgage costs, it's not worth it. What advice would you give to them to help them and encourage them in their HMOs?
I would say that it's never too late to get into property, and also don't hesitate, don't delay, you know, don't make excuses. You know, I'm going to wait until interest rates to fall. You know, I'm going to wait a couple of months for house prices to drop. That's nonsense. Just the best time to get into property was yesterday. So just get out there, source the deal, buy the property, because every month you lose, you're losing capital growth on the bank's leveraged money that you could be making. So whether prices go up or down, it's irrespective, because you can leverage the bank's money and make capital growth on the borrowed money from the bank, especially in affluent areas. And obviously that applies to London and affluent areas. You know, one of the top tips as well is when you're doing a refurb, make sure you do a detailed schedule of works that various different builders can quote on, to make sure you get a good quote. And also, you know, your builder can use that detailed schedule of works to work, to follow and work towards to ensure the project is completed on time and to the specification and standard that you require. And also, one of my big learnings was I had been caught up with a rogue builder in the past, and it's just a nightmare. So I would say to anyone, be prepared to delay a project, you know, a few weeks or even a month. If a good builder is busy, I'm inclined to wait until he's finished his current project to start on my project, even if that's causes a bit of a delay. Or, you know, if you get a quote that comes in 10 to 20% more and you feel that he's the right chap, pay the extra, because that'll certainly save you a lot of heartache and troubles in you know, during the project. Because if you end up with somebody, a rogue builder, that's just a nightmare.
Well, I think that's very, very sage advice there, Ethan. Very, very wise words. Just a final question. I want to ask you about mentoring. Now, you and I have worked together for a number of years. How do you think being on the mentoring program has benefited you and your business?
Obviously, all the support and encouragement that you've given me, and obviously Andy's been instrumental in, you know, systemizing my business, helping me systemize my business from setting up my scanner that downloads documents straight to my Google Drive. And obviously he also has set up my Synology backup system, so all my documents are backed up onto an extra hard drive. And obviously you've helped me with Google Drive in systemizing my business, and it's so easy. You know, you can be anywhere in the world and you can access documents, and it's for somebody like myself, he's not IT orientated, it works extremely well. It's not complicated, and it's definitely the way to go.
Great. And it's allowed you to do what you really love, Ethan, which is outdoor pursuits, isn't it?
Yes. And also, yeah, as I mentioned before, it's being part of a group where everyone encourages one another, and you get motivation and inspiration from others in the group, even though they're just starting out, and that reignites your fire to, you know, get up and get more properties and, you know, build your portfolio as well.
Amazing. Well, Ethan, thank you very, very much indeed for being my guest today. It's been lovely to speak to you, to ask you some questions about your journey, about what you've developed and what you've achieved in those years. And long may it continue. And I hope you have some fantastic adventures lined up for 2024.
Thank you, Wendy. It's been amazing to be on your podcast. Sorry if I was a little bit nervous, but
No, you were great guest, and it's really inspiring to hear what you've achieved. And I think there's you've got a great future over the next few years carrying on building your business.
Fantastic. Thanks for all your help and support. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.